Welcome to Inclusion Bites, your sanctuary for bold conversations that spark change. I'm Joanne Lockwood, your guide on this journey of exploration into the heart of inclusion, belonging, and societal transformation. Ever wondered what it truly takes to create a world where everyone not only belongs, but thrives? You're not alone. Join me as we uncover the unseen, challenge the status quo, and share stories that resonate deep within. Ready to dive in? Whether you're sipping your morning coffee or winding down after a long day, let's connect, reflect, and inspire action together. Don't forget, you can be part of the conversation too. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seechangehappen.co.uk to share your insights or to join me on the show. So adjust your earbuds and settle in. It's time to ignite the spark of inclusion with Inclusion Bites. Today is episode 157 with the title, Raising Voices, Shaping Change. And I have the absolute honor and privilege to welcome Sarah McCracken. Sarah is an award-winning PR and communication specialist, empowering women and diverse voices to raise their profiles and create meaningful change. And when I asked Sarah to describe her superpower, she said that it is helping others find confidence in their visibility and voice. Hello, Sarah. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Joe. Thank you so much for having me this afternoon.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. And for the accent, I'm guessing you're from the Emerald Isle somewhere in there.
Yes, indeed. I am in County Down, Northern Ireland, and we're about maybe 25 miles south of Belfast. So nice and handy. And, you know, if I'm going further south, we're maybe about an hour and 20 minutes from Dublin. So I really have the best of both worlds.
Oh, beautiful. Here. My wife and I went on a holiday to Dublin in the summer, and we drove north to the, because they don't have National Trust in Dublin, in Southern Ireland, in the Republic of Ireland. So we had to drive across the border to Northern Ireland to find a National Trust property, which we visited. It was quite a trek from County Cavan. But yeah, we were determined to find a National Trust property to visit, and yeah, had a good time. And I've been to Belfast a few times, and I've got happy memories of going to Newton Ards, which can't be that far from here.
You're never far from anywhere here, to be honest. But yes, next time you're over then, we'll have to meet up and get a wee cup of tea.
Yeah, that sounds great. Sounds great. If you're listening to this and you're wondering why my voice sounds a little different to usual, I think I've got a bit of a throat thing going on, so every so often my voice cuts out, so please bear with. I'm sure I'll be fine. I've got strepsils, I've got herbal tea in front of me, so I'm sure we'll cope. So Sarah, what makes you tick? You know, why do you do what you do? You know, you're in PR, but why does visibility, diversity, inclusion resonate with you so much?
But the more I did, the more I headed towards like the PR and marketing side of things. And I just absolutely love it. I get such a buzz out of, you know, seeing things in the media, prepping spokespeople, seeing, you know, prepping people to go on podcasts, whatever it happens to be. And just the more I worked within sort of the communication sector, you know, the more I was able to create that change. So I've worked in the healthcare sector, the environment sector. I worked for a political party once upon a time. I worked in education as well as working for businesses and entrepreneurs. The more I worked in that, the more I could see how communications could create change, particularly around campaigning. So, I mean, many years ago, you could smoke in public workplaces in Northern Ireland, obviously right across the UK. And in 2006, the charity I worked with at the time was involved in the Smoke Free Northern Ireland Coalition and that campaign to bring in legislation to ban smoking in public places. And that was kind of my first kind of, we can do this kind of moment, you know, when you're there at a speech and the Secretary of State is making these announcements and you've got your clients from the charity with you, you know, the stakeholders, the people are going to be really impacted for the better as a result of this. And it was just brilliant to be part of that. So yeah, since then I've worked on other campaigns, most recently working on the campaign to bring in climate change legislation in Northern Ireland, which was brought in now a couple of years ago. And my team at the charity I worked with at the time worked really hard on that as well.
Oh, that's pretty really interesting. Love the idea of an alpaca farm. For some reason, my daughter keeps, a couple of years ago, she bought me a present, which was taking the alpacas for a walk, and I got a little alpaca to see over there. Is that an alpaca jumper you're wearing at the moment?
We'd go to shows and, you know, we'd have them on the stand, and I'd be talking to people like yourself who just love alpacas. Never took one for a walk, so I'm not sure that would have ended terribly well, but they are very docile. Because this is getting onto a whole other podcast episode here, but they're very amenable, they're very docile, they do make good pets, and they're probably easier to manage than sheep, so they, you know, people do absolutely love them.
Yeah, you're right, we got a bit off topic there.
Diversity in alpacas.
So PR, I mean, I'm a great believer that organizations need authenticity in their brand, their values, their messaging. And a lot of that, I guess, is PR, trying to align internal, who do we think we are, versus the external public, who do they think we are, and trying to get that alignment of messaging, isn't it? That's not always easy.
No, it's not. And, you know, when I'm doing PR training, I'm always sort of telling people or working with them to understand that, you know, if you have a really shoddy reputation, no amount of PR is going to help that. You will get found out. So it is, like you said, about aligning what are your business goals with what you want to project in the public domain and making sure that those are aligned. But, you know, anything dodgy, anything underhand, you're going to get caught out. I do have an issue with the word spin. Do you know that doesn't help when people refer to PR people as new spin doctors, particularly in the political sphere. But, you know, it is about working really hard just to find out what it is. What is that change you're trying to make in the world, and breaking that down and working out what communications, who can you engage with? What is it you want to say, and how might you say it to your target audience just to create that change or raise that profile or increase that visibility?
The spin you're referring to there, I suppose, is crafting a message in a positive light, I suppose, is the translation of the word spin, isn't it?
It could be, but again, you've referred to that authenticity. Again, I struggle with the word authentic because it sounds like you're trying too hard. So for me, you know, if I'm coaching with individuals, it's about how to be yourself and just bring forward all the good things about what you do and what you say, and just trying to emphasize that rather than be something that you're not, because that could be really difficult as well. But yes, being authentic is key. Being yourself. I do love a bit of LinkedIn content, I have to say, and I will equally post about PR today and I will post about my chickens tomorrow, because that's who I happen to be. I must do an alpaca post, actually. Overdue one of those.
Walking with alpacas. I think that's the title of a book or something. Yeah. I have to author that one. So when you're working with organizations, you know, we're trying to avoid the word spin. We're trying to avoid the word authenticity or authentic. Where do organizations go wrong? I mean, I think we've implied that sometimes what happens is they try and pretend to be what they're not. How do you encourage them to move past that and be honest, or actually change, or actually change their
outlook? Yeah, I think the first step for me is about recognizing what PR actually is. PR is about managing your reputation. It is about engaging with your stakeholders, so that is speaking with them as well as listening to what they have to say. So it sits alongside your marketing and advertising mix. So marketing is clearly about selling stuff, as is advertising. So it is different to that. But in terms of you working with the businesses, it's about just trying to identify what is it is they're trying to achieve and how can communications help that. So we've got all the marketing going on and you've got the adverts and the Facebook stuff. But equally, who do you need to be listening to? What kind of messages do you want to create about your product, business or service that you need to be speaking to your audience about? And it could be trying to work with a politician to bring about legislative change, or it could be about working with an individual who just wants to, you know, get that confidence to raise their profile and visibility. And just the principles are the same. You know, what's the outcome you want to achieve? And then working through how we might achieve that.
You said that marketing is all about selling stuff. I can hear every marketing person out there going, no, we're more than just selling stuff. We're here to create a brand and position the brand and
absolutely
brand values.
And that will help sell stuff, I think. I actually did a talk last week to some marketing students, and I did ask them, you know, what was their take on marketing. So they weren't very forthcoming, to be honest. But yes, I do love working with my marketing colleagues. And again, we've complementary skills, which is really important as well. So when you are developing that overall you know, communications plan, if you like. There will be a marketing element to it. There will be a PR element to it. So the two go really well hand in hand.
To a large extent, PR's a bit harder to nail down and look at ROI, isn't it? You are just literally throwing information out there. You're issuing press releases. You're issuing position papers and statements. Journalists, you've got cat stuck up tree is not worthy of printing in the news. It's got to be shock horror. You're almost going for something that it's a headline. It's challenging, isn't it? Because PR doesn't work. It's got to be different.
Absolutely. But again, PR is so much more than just that media aspect to it. But I mean, I do love the media work. I deliver a lot of how to write a press release training. So we're always talking about what is the news story that we're trying to get out there. Like you said, you know, is it just another cat stuck up a tree? Now, maybe it's an escaped lynx up a tree. That would make a really good story. So it's just understanding, you know, what's the human interest? You know, is it topical and timely? Like we had that massive storm a couple of weeks ago. So many stories in circulation about that. Just making sure it's of value to the media outlets, listeners, as well as trying to get it in front of your audience as well. But yeah, media work, it's brilliant. Love it.
You're trying to, correct me if I'm wrong, you're trying to create human interest out of whatever you're saying, to engage me in some way, positively or negatively, if you're looking for that. You're trying to get me to pay attention to something. Is kind of the mission, is it?
Absolutely. So if we focus just on press releases, sort of the truth test, as I call it. Is your story topical and timely? You know, is it really relevant to the journalist, to the newspaper, as well as to your audience? You know, just because you think it's good doesn't make it newsworthy. Is it unique? If you know yourself from scanning the headlines, you know, it's new things that really get the headlines, that get the stories. And then also, is there a human interest to it as well? It's always, you know, triumph over tragedy. Do you know who has been affected by this? So you might have an initiative that's going to help 10,000 people secure a new medical treatment. I mean, that's just brilliant. Or you might have something, you've received an investment of X tens of thousands, millions of pounds to produce a new product that's going to save whatever it is. Those are all things then that will feed into your story. So yes, when it comes to the media, it's about making sure your story is newsworthy, and then understanding where you're going to place it. So a BBC approach is very, very different to a local newspaper approach, which is very different then to a podcast approach. But the principles then are still the same. Have you got something of benefit to that outlet and their target audience?
So we're living in a world where diversity, equity, inclusion, DEI, it's going through a bout of bad PR, isn't it? It's become a very toxic term. And I'd almost say that the right-wing anti-woke brigade have kind of stolen a bit of a march on DEI and toxified that as a brand. And that's probably happened over the last couple of years, but more rapidly, the last 2 or 3 months, is from what I've seen in the press and the papers. How do they manage to do that so subtly or so overtly, if you like?
Do you know, they're happy to make statements that are incorrect. They're happy to make statements that they know are going to offend people. So maybe on the lower left-hand side, shall we say, people are maybe more reticent to offend because we know, you know, what happens if you get language wrong and how upset people will be over that. You know, we know the potential implications if we inadvertently do something that isn't going to land well. So maybe there's a bit of overthinking there. But from what I can see, like you said, from the news agenda at the minute, is it's free for all and people are saying what they want, which is just not necessarily true. And then we're losing all the fact checkers as well off social media platforms, which is quite frightening in itself. Because then where do I go to get facts verified? Where do my children go who aren't as news savvy? You know, if they're reading stuff on socials, they're not on socials yet, but they will be soon. But how do we help young people even understand the difference between this is factually correct and this is just a load of nonsense?
Yeah, I hear you. But it's, how do you argue back against this, if you like, negative PR onslaught? Because as you say, people just say what they want without any conscience almost, just putting this out there. So if you're hearing negative PR against you or about your organization about what you believe in, direct confrontation, is that the tactic, or putting out a myth-busting, or how would you suggest?
It's really, really difficult. I mean, let's be realistic about it. There's an argument that if you are then to say, oh, so-and-so said X, Y, and Z, and here's why that's incorrect, you're actually giving credibility to what they have said that's incorrect because you're repeating it. So you need to think really carefully in and around that. My own approach would be not to pick a public fight, particularly like over Twitter or X. Do people even still use that? I am off it. But again, it's understanding where's the benefit of getting into a public dispute versus is it, you know, defamatory, libelous, in which case that's going to be a court case. But it's just knowing what your options are. But in terms of that myth busting, yes, there's a need to start, I think, to look really carefully at what the messaging actually is and who we're trying to target and how that message is getting out there as well. So it's maybe not a direct confrontation, but it's certainly upping the game in terms of getting those messages out there. Maybe it is through TikTok, maybe it is through another social channel, but really just being as bold, shall we say, as the other side, and just really starting to take action then to get the messaging right. There are some organisations out there who do fact-checking, as we know, and myth-busting. I mean, Lynn is an agency based in Cardiff, actually. They work globally to try and counter some of those myths and disinformation, particularly around, you know, they work through COVID. They've done some on climate change as well. So there are good people out there trying to do this. But for an individual organisation, you need to weigh up the pros and cons. You know, how is it going to impact on your reputation if you do take this particular stand? How will it impact on your reputation if you take that particular stand? And just working through the pros and cons of each and getting that balance, and then having a way of doing it that you can sleep well at night, knowing that you have done your best to stand up for what you believe in.
What I'm hearing, I think, saying there is tell your own story. Don't necessarily engage in somebody else's story. Keep being the best version of you, your organisation, you can be, and not try and challenge each individual statement, because all you'll end up doing is get caught up in denials and counter denials and giving them the ammunition to come back on you with yet another wild statement, I guess.
And it's exhausting if you start that. And what you've just described is being authentic. It's being yourself. You know, this is who I am, and having that confidence to do it. And that can be really difficult as well, just to start to say, no, this is what I believe and this is what I stand for. So again, it's how do you do it so that you know that you can make a difference in the world, that you can bring your colleagues with you. How can you build that movement? How can you mobilise people to come onto your side as well? But yeah, you do you and do it really, really well. And then again, because you're being yourself and because there's no grey areas, then it's really hard to start to, you know, not attack the person. That's not right, the phrasing, but it's really hard then to start to pick holes in what it is they're saying, if it's, you know, if it's evidence-based, if it's factually correct.
What worries me at the moment is that there is no filter, and some of these statements are being green-lighted by the mainstream media, politicians, and it's really hard sometimes to actually get the facts and the truth out of these. You know, if you're sat there as a person in the street looking up at this, there's a lot of stuff going on at the moment, which is, you know, whether we talk about vaccines, climate change, gender, all these kind of things, all in the news at the moment, have become polarizing people to the extremes.
Yeah. So again, it's understanding who's your target audience. Who do you want to speak to about these things? So rather than picking a fight in the media, I said I love campaigning, I love the public affairs side of things. So maybe as a business or an organisation, you're doing some really good work and you should be engaging with your local politician, no matter where they are in the UK or even across the world. You know, so if, you know, say there was a debate coming up in Westminster on gender or violence against women or whatever, you know, area of interest that your organisation has, I would be encouraging you to write a briefing, to be engaging with your local MP, to be engaging with people who are going to be speaking to this motion and informing them of the actual facts of the matter. And then that will help them, because I would suggest the majority of politicians, they don't want to stand up and say the wrong thing. They don't want to be then slated in the media the next day by citing facts and figures that are incorrect, because it does, you know, that's still a possibility. So again, you can take action that way. So it's not into the media, it is direct into the people who will be speaking about an issue that affects what it is that you do.
So that's kind of lobbying. So what you're doing is you're giving a position paper, statement of fact, evidence, citations directly to a politician or to an organization, say, this is our truth. We want you to process this and form an opinion from it.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Because that's what the people doing the negative PR are doing, isn't it? They're creating the same information. So it's counteracting it with your story, not arguing someone else's story.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I find that politicians, they want to be well-informed. They genuinely want to engage with, you know, charities, community groups, you know, people, you know, in whatever sphere they happen to be. I have an example in some of the public affairs training that I do, and it's about the amount of spend that oil companies spend on lobbying on climate change. I mean, it's tens of millions of dollars. So again, like you just said, the other side is lobbying away. So there's nothing to stop us from doing that as well. You know, we're voters, we're citizens, MPs work for you. So again, get in there and start to help them understand the challenges that you're facing. And you don't be needing those tens of millions of dollars either. You can go direct to them through their constituency, through their Westminster offices. It's all open access, and just go for it.
Write them a letter, send them an email.
That's the one. Invite them out to your community group, you know, invite them into your premises, sit down and have a cup of tea and a chat about what the challenges are and just help move the conversation forward.
I mean, it's a well-known saying, the facts don't change people. So it's trying to cross that bridge between the emotion and the logic, isn't it? And that's the challenge we have. Because if the facts change me, I wouldn't drive too fast. I wouldn't eat red meat. I'd go for a run every day. I'd be healthy. But the reality is I haven't got the emotional connection with some of those things. That's how does PR bridge that emotion versus logic gap?
That comes back to how you tell your story, your storyteller. So yeah, like you said, if I send you, you know, a 2-page briefing document, beautifully written, all the bullet points about the issues, yeah, I'll skim read it. I might pick up the headline and that'll be it. But if I was to sit down with somebody, or if I was to brief a spokesperson to go in and have a conversation with a journalist, with a politician, whoever it happens to be, and have them tell their story, then that's going to have a much bigger impact. So say you're working on an issue in connection with young carers, which is an issue I've worked on previously. You know, you need to get the young people telling their story about the impacts that caring for their family member has on them. And that is so much more powerful than you or I telling their story on their behalf.
Yeah, I think we're seeing a lot of stuff in the media at the moment around toxic behaviour in the workplace. Obviously, we had a big push, Sarah Everard, Me Too movement, these kind of, but we've seen some more recent displays of toxicity coming out. How do people know they're not alone? How can we get people to trust that they will be heard? Because that's part of the problem as well, isn't it? Trust.
Absolutely. And again, knowing that other people are going through what you have gone through, I think is really important. So the first step for me, and I have faced some very toxic workplace environments, and the first step for me is always telling somebody. So it might be a trusted colleague, or it might be somebody completely unconnected with work, could be a WhatsApp, could be a, you know, whatever it happens, a cup of tea in a chat, whatever it happens to be. But once you speak it into existence, I guarantee you'll find out that somebody else is going through something similar. And it's by talking it through, then you can start to understand what your potential options might be. I think that the Me Too movement is, you know, particularly interesting because every single day there is yet another story, there is yet another article out there of something that has clearly gone wrong. I use the phrase hiding in plain sight quite a lot. You know, the perpetrators are hiding in plain sight. So again, the more we talk about it, the more we can share experiences, and the more then we can mobilise and come together to tackle whatever the issue happens to be.
In the paper again is a previously senior royal family member who, for whatever reason, seems to keep having a negative story about them in relation to past acquaintances, people who are proved to be, involved with sexual offences potentially in the past. So is there a danger sometimes that we think we can put a veneer over the story and hope that people are going to wash with it. But the reality is, if you don't go deep enough and cut hard enough and expose yourself deep enough the first time, it's going to be death by a thousand cuts. People are going to come back on you. They're going to keep digging and digging and digging and until they really get to the bone. And I think that's what we're seeing with this particular individual at the moment. They weren't authentic, even if we don't like that word.
Maybe they were.
Yeah, they were lying. Maybe that's a strong word. Yeah, they weren't telling the whole truth. Let's put it that way.
They're telling their version of it. Yeah, I mean, for a journalist, that's the story that keeps on giving. But I think putting that to one side, I think this is where the value of understanding PR and communications really comes in, you know, as a business, as an individual. And again, back to the thing, if you're doing something wrong, you're going to get found out. So working with individuals who are, you know, nice people, if you have somebody on your side who understands the media landscape, then they can advise you on, is it a good idea to do an interview like that one that we're talking about? Probably not. But clearly they're not listening and they've gone ahead and done it. So again, it's working with that trusted comms advisor as to where would be the best place to tell my story. So it could be a Newsnight story. It could be in The Guardian. It could be on a podcast somewhere. But again, having somebody on your side to help prep for it is also useful. And again, media training isn't about learning how to lie on camera. It's about how to answer the questions. It's about how to come across as the type of person that you really are to the listeners. It's helping you bridge between the awkward questions that are going to be pending. And if you've done something wrong, front it up. You know, you can admit your mistake and you can come out better than making up stories and talking nonsense.
That's getting ahead, control of the narrative, owning your story again, isn't it? That's kind of what you're saying there.
Absolutely. And it's back to what is it you're trying to achieve? If something's gone wrong, it's gone wrong. That's where your crisis comms comes into play. It is going to affect your reputation as an individual or as an organisation. So again, it's just understanding how things work and you will come through it. But again, it's how then you then in the future then start to rebuild that reputation, rebuild that visibility in a positive manner as well.
Yeah, I suppose in my experience, when things have gone wrong, they go worse. The more you try and dig, don't they? And I think, especially when you're very much in the public eye, there are people with a vested interest to keep digging. And I think that's the problem we find is that you're better off just telling the truth, resigning, running away, hiding for a bit, and then coming back again. Obviously, if it's not a career limiting, but yeah.
You know, as a genuine individual trying to create that change in the world, or are we then worrying too much about the consequences when, you know, those with much thicker skins who are now running other countries, shall we say, are just carrying on, putting out those incorrect messages?
Yeah, talking about people with thick skin running other countries, it's incredible what's going on at the moment where it's like they seem to be oblivious or consciously oblivious to the messaging that's going out. They're so focused on their version of the truth. And I think you mentioned that now. It's your perspective. It's your version of the truth. If you really believe it, become invested in it, then you say it with confidence, don't you? And I think you're not willing to listen to other people's versions. And again, you're controlling the narrative. You're not negotiating. You're owning that stance. I think it's quite a powerful technique, isn't it? Although I'm not saying I advocate it, but it's a powerful technique.
Yeah, and I mean, what can we learn from that? So if others, maybe with a more aspect to their personalities who wanted to create positive change in the world, if they started to take on some of those characteristics and be really forceful and forthright in what they want to say, would that help those messages land better? Might have to give it a go. But again, it's not getting into that public argument. Who do we need to be targeting? How do you really sort of hone in on who you need to be speaking to and then building from the ground up? I think certainly that's, you know, if you can mobilise the masses on your side as well, that starts to help as well. So it could be 100 people, it could be 5 people, it could be 1 million people, whatever it happens to be, to start to build that change that we need.
But the problem with that position is it's quite a privilege to have that communications power. People were talking about, you know, we're touching on EDI, D&I, diversity inclusion here. And one of the challenges we find where people are marginalized, they are voiceless, they don't have the access to these rooms, these people, these channels. So often the PR goes, or the messaging goes undefended because no one's listening. They can't get their message out.
Yeah, and that's something that shouldn't be happening. I mean, in terms of the media, in terms of politicians, you know, any single person can start to build a relationship with a journalist or a politician. But again, it's understanding that that is an option open to you. So I suppose there's an education piece there as well. Does it start within a community? Does it start within schools to try and educate our young people better as to, you know, they do have the power in their hands, but it's how we get them to understand how they can use it then for the benefit. But you're absolutely right. It's people with no voice or marginalised voices are struggling to get that messaging out there in terms of the change we need to see. So what can you and I in a position of privilege do to help them? And that's part of what I'm about. It's why I would run masterclasses on how to raise your visibility. You know, it's why I'm trying to put content out of my socials to really help people get the basics of PR. And then hopefully they will take that then and start to use it for themselves.
Yeah, I agree. And that's what we've got to do. We've got to believe we're not alone. Team up. But the danger I found is that, and I've had it to me, I do a lot of media stuff. I even go on GB News occasionally and put myself in the lion's den and get abused by the guests and presenters sometimes. And a word that keeps being thrown at me is I'm an activist. As soon as you start throwing that word at somebody, it creates a stereotype, it creates a devaluation of my view. It implies that I'm fighting and angry and protesting and I'm mobilizing. All these kind of words spring to mind and the imagery suddenly pops into your head. This person's a thug or whatever. Because all the nice people, they're wearing suits and ties, they're reasonable, they're lovely people. An activist conjures up some sort of anarchic person, I think. That's the danger sometimes of creating a mob, even a well-mannered mob.
That's an interesting one. Sort of, are you going to be throwing, you know, tomato soup over the Mona Lisa for just stop oil? You know, that's an activist. Interestingly enough, I am currently working for the Climate Coalition at the minute for Great Big Green Week, which is taking place at the end of June. And the theme is Let's Swap Together for Good. So it's how can we swap fossil fuels for solar panels? How can we as a community come together to, you know, develop an eyesore into a beautiful pollinator-rich area that people can enjoy? And it's exactly that. The people participating in that are not activists in that sense of the word of, you know, out with placards. They're quietly getting on with it. They're quietly making the changes to target climate change and improve nature. So that's exactly right. How do we develop the messaging around that? How do we create that story of what they're doing to show that anybody can make change and you don't have to be chaining yourself to the railings? You can if you want now. You know, I'm not standing in your way now. I'll bring you a cup of tea while you're stood there, not letting whoever it is through. You know, there's millions of people out there who are quietly getting on with it, quietly making the changes that we need to say. And again, how do we celebrate that? How do we find those stories? How do we get those into the public domain? Because those can be pretty powerful. And I think it's back to what we already talked about. How do we start to speak it into existence and start discussing these things with each other? And then you think, oh yes, they're doing that. And I'm doing that too. And we're doing it together. You know, things then will start to build momentum from that.
As you talk about climate change, Ellen, as you're talking, I'm thinking Greta Thunberg. And how the negative stereotypes around her, being an activist, being young, being autistic, suddenly, what does she know? She's a scruffy little teenager sitting on the street with a placard where we've got all these climate scientists who know far more, and she's just causing trouble. And I think I was watching Ed Miliband on the news last night, and there's negative stuff coming out about him. It's all trying to, the government need to get rid of him because he's crazy and he's come up with his harebrained climate ideas. So you can see the lobby groups are out there counter briefing these positive green energy, positive sustainability stories. And you sometimes have to lean back and think, what are they trying to sell me? What's this story trying to sell me? It's trying to sell me oil is good, fossil fuels are good, power is good, incumbency is good. This newfound stuff, it's bad because it's not what we make money out of. And it's protectionism about the status quo, some of it, isn't it?
That's a very cynical and probably very accurate way of looking at things, I would suggest. But it's back to what we talked about. You know, negativity sells. Do you know, there's no point in running a story about, oh, how great it is with three bees in the garden. But yeah, for a communication specialist, it's how we take positive stories and turn them into something that we can pitch to the media, that we can create content around and get on the socials and get out of that bubble of negativity. So yeah, there is a skill to it. I mean, anybody can do PR. I'm happy to teach you the basics, but it's, you know, by building up those relationships with journalists, it's by building up relationships with our politicians that we can really start to make the meaningful change that we need to see.
Of course, we live in a world of social media. We're all journalists, we're all publishers, we all have access. It's just learning that you can have a voice, and you don't have to change the world. You just got to change one or two people and create a movement, and you know, be that activist if you want to be an activist. But we don't have to be silent, do we?
Absolutely not. And social media is a gift in that sense. I mean, back in the day when I used to fax press releases, you know, when it was harder to get your story out there, we all now have a direct line to whoever it is that we want to talk to. Now, notwithstanding the algorithms and they keep feeding you content, you know, that they think you're going to like, there is a way out there to get in touch with people, to create those profiles, that movement like you've just alluded to, which is absolutely brilliant. I mean, there is a negative side to it as well. I did a talk last week to some master's students, basically reminding them not to post nonsense on social media because it could really jeopardise their careers in the future, you know, when stories start to resurface. So there's pros and cons to socials, but I personally think the pros outweigh the cons, especially if we use it intentionally to educate, to inform, to build connections. And I've met so many really awesome people through social media from all different spheres, all different types of organisations. So there's so many people out there that are doing good things that we can connect with. And yeah, like you said, choosing your social media platform appropriately can really help take that story forward.
We met on social media. We found each other on Facebook somehow, didn't we? So yeah, it's awesome people connect. That's brilliant. I think the word you picked up there was the intentionality or intentional. So you're not just shooting from the hip. You're being measured, intentional. You understand about the impact over and above your intent, what you're trying to get out of it. When you go half-baked and you're speaking from the emotion, from your amygdala kicks in, your vagus nerve kicks in, you're angry and feisty, and I want to teach you a lesson here. That's when it kind of goes a bit pear-shaped.
Potentially, yes. I'm smiling to myself here. You know when you get an email into the inbox from maybe somebody in work and they've just wound you up the wrong way and you hit the reply instantly, you know, that's when it can go pear-shaped. Social media is an interesting one. And yes, you know, as a PR lead, you know, I would be advising you, you know, not to respond to that comment immediately. It's maybe just wait and see, you know, is the story going to play out? Because when you do respond with emotion, you might perpetuate the story. Whereas if you maybe just let it sit 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 24 hours, whatever it happens to be, it could just then fizzle out. And you'll definitely feel better when you've gone away and made yourself a cup of tea and then come back to it. But it can be difficult, especially if people are attacking you personally. And again, maybe there's different coping mechanisms when you look at them, which is just not reading the comments. It's like the old New Theatre critics, and you don't read the reviews after the first night. You know, should you be reading your restaurant reviews? But you know what? If people are attacking you, it's really, really hard. But again, it's about taking that deep breath, moral high ground, and then coming back to it with an actual plan of how you might counter the story. I mean, if it's defamatory or libelous, you have a potential court case in your hand and you don't want to be jeopardising that. Or if it's just low-grade irritations, you maybe just have to choose to ignore it, which is difficult.
I was thinking back to another recent story where someone obviously was pausing and reflecting, and the story just got worse while they were keeping quiet. It was the former Archbishop of Canterbury, if I remember rightly. He came out, he stood up in the House of Lords and joked and laughed. So completely inappropriate messaging, but you could see the momentum building. You could see the trajectory was he's going to end up resigning. And you wonder somehow whether he either wasn't listening to his advisors or they were believing their own PR that they could ride this out. But clearly, by the hour, it was deteriorating. You think, well, it's only a matter of time now before he resigns. And then, sure enough, he resigns. And that's often the case with politicians as well, isn't it? Where they're trying to cling on or they're just hoping that if they keep quiet and don't react, it will just blow over. But it doesn't, does it? Sometimes you have to put a message out.
Yeah, you have to put the message out there. But again, it's deciding what the best course of action is. And there's no right or wrong answers. You maybe the Archbishop did genuinely think he could ride this out. We don't know because we weren't party to the discussions. But you do see other cases like that interview about the Royal we discussed earlier, you know, clearly not listening to any advice whatsoever. And, you know, I've even read stories from the journalist who did the interview that, you know, she basically said it was ill-advised and they couldn't understand why he actually agreed to it. But there you go. They got their story on that as well. Yeah, you want to listen to your advisors, but equally who's given you the advice, if it's people you've surrounded with, because they say yes, that's not going to help you in the long term. If they're maybe independent with a different viewpoint, that could be potentially useful for you as well. And it's as well from a PR perspective, it's about having that overview of the wider news agenda. So it could be quite a small issue which then gets blown out of proportion or escalates to something bigger because of the wider news context. I mean, looking at the case within the church and for the Archbishop, I mean, that is a story that we're seeing over and over and over again. So there's still something wrong there that needs to be fundamentally dealt with. But yeah, interesting. Would love to know, you know, are there case studies out there of, you know, how he was advised or who was advising and did they genuinely think it would blow over?
So you work predominantly with business owners. I know you're passionate about having female-led organisations as well. How do you go about engaging with them to start with? Do you have a sort of kind of a step-by-step walkthrough about how you approach this? Is it about trying to understand, you know, you must do some fact-finding on their brand, their values and things, I guess, at the beginning?
Yes, I have a number of different approaches. I mean, I've been working full-time for myself since October 2024. I spent about a year and a half before that doing my own PR, building my own profile, my own visibility, and starting to do some PR training on the side while I still had my day job. So that all helped. So now what I do a lot of, I spend a lot of time on LinkedIn. Never thought I would say that. But actually, in terms of platform, it's very nice. There's nice people on it. I'm not saying a lot of the toxicity and negativity that we'd see on other platforms. So I've spent a lot of time trying to understand who I'm trying to talk to. My natural affinity is with women, with female business owners, with women who are trying to progress in their careers and those working particularly in the comms industry. So again, that's where I'm gravitating to at the minute. But equally, it's about understanding where it is and how I can help them. So having done a lot of work through Women in PR Northern Ireland, which I co-founded in 2018, what was coming up when we just spoke with the women there was they just lacked confidence. You know, they felt like imposters. They felt invisible. And again, they were having challenges and they didn't realise that half the people in the room were facing similar challenges. So again, it's how do I bring people together to talk those issues through? To know that they're absolutely flipping brilliant at what it is that they do and that I can sit with them and take them through step by step then and just how to start to tell their own story in whatever sphere they happen to work in.
Yeah, I think you're right. I've gone through my own imposter syndrome journey. I spent, when I started this business 8 and a bit years ago, it took me a while to find a voice. I was a lurker on LinkedIn, on the platforms, and maybe you brave it and like a comment, and then you might put a little comment, and you might put a bit more, and then you might put a bit more, then you might share something with a comment. And then eventually you think, hang on a minute, I need my voice here. I need to be the author. I need to own my own story now. It does take a while because you're looking for approval early on, aren't you? You want someone to validate you. Again, the imposter syndrome, the limiting belief. What do I know? What do I matter? It takes a journey to find that voice.
Absolutely. And I've been there myself. It was a couple of years ago now, I got myself a wonderful career coach because I wanted to move on from my role. It wasn't serving me. I wasn't achieving what I wanted. And I did a lot of work with them in terms of where I was going next. And part of that was to start to engage more on social media. I mean, I love writing. I do PR. I can write content till the cows come home. But I remember physically thinking ill at the thought of I am now going to write something and put it on LinkedIn. So I had to overcome all that myself. And yeah, it's a mindset, it's a limiting belief. And once somebody gives you that little push to do it and you've done it, it's like, oh, the world hasn't ended. So I hope I can be that little push for some people to start, just to have that confidence to start maybe posting more content, whatever it happens to be, or, you know, pitching to a podcast, or just, you know, cohesively or comprehensively looking at how they can just develop a plan to achieve what it is they want to achieve. But yeah, I get imposter syndrome all the time. Like, let's be realistic here. I was delivering a training course in public affairs, and there was an ex-politician on the call. I was thinking, why aren't you my guest speaker? Why are you here? So this all whizzes through your head, and then you have a big smile. It's like, well, hello and welcome. How are you today? And then you have a conversation and you understand why they're there, and then you start to help each other out. But yeah, we just have to keep working through it.
Yeah, I used to have this thing about this podcast. I used to pitch it to people I knew, easy targets. And then I've started going, you know, as we've talked about earlier, going onto Facebook, just posting into these Facebook groups, be a guest. Because I realised, you know, this is episode 157. You know, I've been doing this for 5 years now. 5 years I've been doing this podcast. I'm a podcaster. I think, yeah, I now identify as a podcaster. Before I was just like, no, I don't know what I'm doing. There's always people out there with big shows and big this and big that. What do I know? And then he realised that actually taking that first step, actually doing something means you're doing it. And you have to start owning it and you need to get the momentum. And now I go onto LinkedIn and think this person's, I like their opinion, I like what they're saying. Let's just start dropping stuff into their inbox and DMing them and saying, I think you're brilliant. I'd love to have a chat with you on my podcast. And all of a sudden people say, yeah, okay, I'll have a go at that. I've pitched a couple of people on Instagram who are kind of, I don't want to be unkind, C-list, D-list type TV personalities who've been in drama shows like that. And one of them actually engaged and wrote back and said, yeah, tell me more. Here's my email address. Write to me and I'll see what I can do. Oh, yeah. So, of course, once you start getting up the alphabet towards the A-list, you start building more credibility, don't you? You then up yourself from being a Z-list interviewer, and I'm not saying you're a Z-list, but you move into that kind of B's and C's and D's, and then suddenly they say, oh, who else has been on it? Oh, they've been on it, and then they feel like they're in the right zone as well. So you've got to try and create that credibility. You know, fake it till you make it, if you like. That takes a bit of backbone sometimes, doesn't it?
Yeah, and you sit there thinking, should I send the email? What's the worst that's going to happen? They're going to say no is the worst, or they might just ignore you. But either way, you've lost absolutely nothing by sending that request. Who wouldn't want to come on your podcast? Do you know, it's brilliant.
Yeah, I know.
And it's also like that. It's in a virtuous circle. Do you know, you do one interview, and then that creates credibility. I mean, when I looked into your podcast, Sam Rathling's been a former guest. She's just brilliant. And I am involved in the Social Selling Academy, which she's involved in. So that immediately gave you credibility. What am I, an F-lister? Anyway, that immediately gave you credibility for me to think, yes, no, I will go and speak to Jo on her podcast, which is just great.
I remember now, you sort of said, I remember you posting back saying, oh, Sam's been on. That sounds like a good podcast. So yeah, it is. It's that. It comes back to what Sam talks about, social selling. It's about creating that brand, that curiosity, and that reputation of being consistent, isn't it?
So yeah, so every little helps. And it does really frustrate me. You know, I would go in and talk to a lot of business groups, or I would run webinars on visibility and PR in general. And it is frustrating when people think, oh, I don't like social media, I don't know what to do. And it's really not about you. It's about you, your product, your business, your service. And social media is just a channel to get it out into the world. So once you kind of get over that little ick, if you like, in your head, the next bit is, how do we create some content? And again, people get stuck on what content can I create? And, you know, 2 minutes of a conversation and I'm just blown away by the brilliance of people and the stories they have to tell. And then we can create content around that. And then the next step is just, oh my goodness, what if nobody likes it? Well, so what? At least it's out in the domain. People will love it. I can guarantee it. And then we just, that's that first step. And then the next first step. And then the next first step after that. And before you know it, you look back and look how far you've come.
Yeah, I love that. As long as you're intentional and you're doing it from the right place, then having an opinion is what people want. They want your opinion. They want you to believe in something. And I always quote Chris Evans, the broadcaster, when he said, you've got to be Marmite. Half the world's going to love you and half the world's going to hate you. Because that way you polarize your audience, and then you've got an audience where you're nothing to nobody or nothing to anybody. Nobody resonates with you. So you've really got to try and polarize your tribe or your people, even if it's just a minority tribe, whatever it is. Know who you're speaking to, and the people who aren't going to listen, don't worry about them. you want to speak to the people who do this, the echo chamber. Just keep feeding the echo chamber. Well, I know people don't like me because if you go onto Twitter and search for my name, I feel sorry there's a nurse with the same name, Joanne Lockwood. She does some great stuff, but if you search for Joanne Lockwood, you'll see a whole lot of toxic stuff about me, and it's quite funny, some of it, because I don't do anything about it because it's all engagement. It all amplifies. It's all creating a message. You know, I look at my YouTube comments and, you know, everyone I know shares it. Look, I've had all these positive reviews on my YouTube. I get thousands of toxic reviews on my YouTubes, lots of down likes. And it's just part of it. And I just look at it and go, you've read it. You've taken part. You've engaged. You've amplified me. You've boosted it. That's fine. Go for it. Keep going. My job is done. You're proving my point.
I love that. Yeah, they don't realize they're actually contributing to raising your profile in a positive sense. So yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, if I can become infamous in their circles because there's various shades of grey, isn't there, with people's negativity. Some people are followers. Some people are kind of on the fences. They're not quite sure. Some of the leaders, they were protagonists of the whole thing. So all I don't want to talk to the protagonists, the people who are anti-end. I want to talk to the people who are kind of the undecideds. They want to find out more people, the laggers, if you like, in that, the lurkers. I can engage with them. And then they go, oh, I wonder what she's really on about. You go, okay, forget your ear. I've got opportunities. But yeah, if you never say anything, how can people ever hear you?
But think of the negativity as well it costs, or the energy it costs to write that negativity. You know, imagine if that kind of energy was channeled into something, you doing something good or being nice to somebody. I mean, gosh, the world would be a better place. We wouldn't be on this podcast discussing it.
No. Well, I get people who take the trouble to somehow work out my address and write a letter to me and tell me how much they don't like me, let alone emails. You know, I get all this stuff, and it's like, well, fair play. You've done some research. You haven't just got the tweet back or something. You've actually found my website, and you've gone to my info page. You found my email address in the contact me page, and you've sent me an email. You've actually typed words. It's like, well, I'm impressed. This is good.
So I'm laughing at the letter writers because they've actually had to buy a stamp. It's costing
money. Buy a stamp. Yeah, and because my public address is my accountant's, then my accountant ends up forwarding it on for the love stamp. So yeah, it's like two stamps.
Keeping the post office going single-handed here. Very good.
It's like three quid.
Yeah. Well, love it. But yeah, I think some of that negativity, it is also what causes reticence in new business owners, business leaders. And, you know, they're selling perfectly reasonable new products and services. You know, it's not even going to be something necessarily controversial, for want of a better description. So there is just that apprehension of if I do post content or if I promote what I'm doing, it's even, oh, people are going to think, you know, who does she think she is? Do you know, how would she know all that kind of thing? And again, that's a confidence thing. That's something that's instilled in us from a young age, that you shouldn't blow your own trumpet, that you shouldn't be singing your own praises. I'm over that, in case you can't tell. And again, I want to then start to help other people, other women in particular, just have that confidence to do that. And once they start, oh my goodness, they don't stop. It's absolutely phenomenal to see. I get a nice email in saying, look, I read your thing. I watched your YouTube video. And I'd one the other day from a girl. And, you know, I've watched your YouTube video. I've discussed it with my team. And we're now going to implement some of the things that you said to do. Equally terrifying and brilliant, to be honest. I'm terrifying that they've listened, but brilliant that I know it'll make a difference what they're about to do. So it is nice to get that positive feedback. But
it's nice to be quoted, isn't it? Where people quote you, or they bump into you 6 months later and say, oh, I've listened to this and I read that and you're a hero of mine. And blah, blah, blah. You go, wow, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Didn't know anyone was listening. Thank you.
Yeah, that's the other thing. When you go on the radio sometimes and do a broadcast, I've done a few of them for the various organisations I've worked with, and we're having a chat, you think nobody's listening. So I've done a radio interview, and then 10 minutes later I get a text or a phone call from somebody going, I just heard you on the radio. Somebody was actually listening. What did I say? Did it sound okay? But again, I can't undo what I've just said or spoken about, and that's just the way it happens to be.
Yeah, I get that sometimes when I've done a few LBC, Nick Ferrari type, and some other ones on LBC, and I get someone text me later and they go, oh, I was in my car driving here and I was just having my coffee and sitting in the canteen, and I thought, I know that voice. And it's like, so you get a little text message a little bit later, oh, there are people out there. It's nice.
It is nice.
It validates what you do, I think. It validates, you know, we talk about PR, it can be a bit thankless. You know, you feel like you're just blowing into the wind sometimes and hoping something sticks and lands. And when it does, it really is an ego boost. Well, ego is maybe the wrong word, but a confidence boost, maybe.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier about how do you measure the value of PR, you know, because obviously marketing, ad spend, you can see all that. You can see a direct link into product sales, because marketing is about selling stuff. Sorry to all the marketers listening. So PR, it is different. It's about that reputation, that engagement piece. So again, setting your objectives. I want to brief 10 politicians. I want to achieve 3 newspaper feature articles. I want to tell the story about X, Y, and Z. So it's setting different types of objectives. But I do know, you know, if you're looking for something, say you want to get a career coach or a service like that, if you Google that or Google somebody's name because they've been recommended, if you find an article about them somewhere on the internet, maybe, you know, in a magazine or a newspaper or a blog or whatever it happens to be, then you're going to think, oh, they've got a bit of credibility because I can now read a bit more about them. So that's the value of PR as well. It's building that credibility through different outlets that's not paid for. So again, that's going to enhance your credibility and hopefully down the line boost your presence. And again, you know, from features, from articles, you can see an uplift perhaps in your website traffic or in product sales when an article has come out. So there are ways around it, but keeping at the heart of it, PR is about your reputation and your visibility and your credibility, and it's how you listen and engage with your stakeholders, and you'll not go too far wrong.
One of the things I often say to people is, you know, the old adage in business was, it's not what you know, it's who you know. And I say that's moved on now. It's not what you know, but who knows you.
Exactly.
And PR is about trying to get that who are you out, your message, your brand, whatever it is, you know, marketing messages, whatever, selling stuff. Also, who am I? That's the PR side. So it's not that I don't care who you are, but I care more that you know who I am. And it's kind of, that's what PR does, isn't it? It's making sure you position yourself in the minds of people in the right way.
The example I've used recently in some of my trainings is what are they saying about you when you're not in the room? So I think it's very similar to what you've just said. You know, with the marketing students last week, I had some celebrity examples. You know, what are you saying about them when you're not in the room? One was a controversial owner of a social media platform, I think that's how we'll describe them. And again, there was divided opinion. Some people thought he was a great business person. Other people thought he was a bit of a prat. So again, but it's understanding how is that opinion formed? Because I had a challenge. Well, have you met him? Do you know what that they're really like? I also, Taylor Swift as a slightly better example. But again, there were Swifties in the room. There was people who didn't like her. And again, it's the conversation then is how have you formed that opinion about people? So it can apply to you and me as well. You know, how are people listening to this podcast have formed an opinion about me, good or bad? I don't know what it is. If it's good, please get in touch with me. Let's have a cup of tea and a chat. If it's bad, write me a letter because you'll have to pay for a stamp. Who knows?
A stamp on it.
But you know, what are people saying about you when you're not in the room? That is how PR can help.
No, I agree. I think that's good. And touching on Taylor Swift there, I mean, I think she's a fantastic singer. But actually, more importantly, she's a fantastic businesswoman as well, business person as well. She is a phenomenal entrepreneur in the way she's merchandised and marketed and created that brand and that wealth she's accumulated. It's not just by singing, she's created a brand. I think that's the powerful thing that Taylor Swift's done. Same way we've got other people. But, you know, you look at people like maybe in the past, Elvis, they were kind of made by a manager or made by an external person. I think Taylor Swift owned her own brand. An image. I think that's what I always admire with Taylor Swift anyway. So yeah, that's how I describe her. A fantastic singer and a fantastic businesswoman.
That's good. Yeah. And what can we learn from that? You know, if we're feeling reticent about taking that first step and that next first step, you know, what was Taylor Swift's first step? What would Taylor do? Maybe that could be your new mantra.
What would Taylor do?
Yeah.
She'd leave her record company and re-record all the songs so they didn't get any revenue from the old back catalogue. Yeah, I think that's a great thing, isn't it? Own your content is a great lesson from that. Own your content and don't give it away for free, or don't sign a deal with it. It restricts your use of content. So yeah, I think that's a good lesson as well.
Yeah.
So Sarah, if people want to write to you properly, electronically, I mean, I don't suggest everyone pops out, buys a stamp and sticks it on an envelope, posts. So how can people find you, get hold of you?
I spend a lot of time on LinkedIn. So Sarah McCracken, FCIPR, which is Fellow of the Chartered Institute of Public Relations. So you'll find me on LinkedIn a lot. And again, it's what's worked well for me as a brand, as a service provider. I have content on Instagram, but again, Instagram's really difficult. So again, if you're judging where to put your social content, where is your audience hanging out? So LinkedIn, Sarah McCracken. Instagram is SarahMcCracken_PR. Or if you would rather have content about chickens, no alpacas, maybe some sheep, you've got Sarah's Country Life on Instagram as well, which is a bit more lighthearted. I also have a website, which is www.theprclub.co.uk. And I do have some free resources and downloads on that as well.
Fabulous. Well, I'll put a link to all of that in the show notes below. Sarah, just for those who are listening, S-A-R-A, no H, Sarah without an H. McCracken is M small C big C R A C R A C K E N. Is that, yep.
That's me, yes.
Oh, yeah. Sarah, it's been a fantastic chat talking about PR, alpacas, Taylor Swift, and people in the public eye we probably keep talking about. Thank you so much.
Really Thank you it. For having me.
As we bring this conversation to a close, I want to express my deepest gratitude to you, our listener, for lending your ear and heart to the cause of inclusion. Today's discussion struck a chord. Consider subscribing to Inclusion Bites and become part of our ever-growing community, driving real change. Share this journey with friends, family, and colleagues. Let's amplify the voices that matter. Got thoughts, stories, or a vision to share? I'm all ears. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seachangehappen.co.uk and let's make your voice heard. Until next time, this is Joanne Lockwood, signing off with a promise to return with more enriching narratives that challenge, inspire, and unite us all. Here's to fostering a more inclusive world, one episode at a time. Catch you on the next bite.